This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
From ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Tens of thousands of mourners paying their respects to Pope Francis. His body is lying in state at St. Peter's Basilica. The Vatican says it may extend hours beyond midnight to accommodate the crowds until his funeral on Saturday. ABC's Terry Moran has more on who will attend.
Leaders from around the world will be there, including President Trump and the First Lady, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and Prince William. The Pope's funeral on Saturday will begin with Mass at 10 a.m. local time in the square in front of St. Peter's Basilica, followed by a burial at the Basilica of St. Mary Major, a couple of miles away. The Pope breaking with tradition, asking to be buried, quote, in the earth, simple, without particular decoration.
After the funeral, cardinals convene to choose a new pope. Stocks gaining some ground after weeks of losses, investors bolstered by President Trump's recent optimism over trade talks. And New Jersey fire crews continue to battle a wildfire in Ocean County. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Average gasoline prices in Wisconsin have fallen 5.7 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $2.95 a gallon, according to Gas Buddy's survey of over 3,000 stations in Wisconsin. Prices in Wisconsin are 12.9 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 43.4 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. According to Gas Buddy price reports, the cheapest station in Wisconsin was priced at $2.63 a gallon Sunday, while the most expensive was $3.33 a gallon, a difference of 70 cents per gallon. The national average price of gasoline has fallen 3.4 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $3.10 a gallon. The national average is down 1.8 cents per gallon from a month ago and stands 54.6 cents per gallon lower than a year ago, according to Gas Buddy data compiled for more than 11 million weekly price reports covering over 150,000 gas stations across the country. The national average price of diesel has decreased 2.7 cents in the last week. Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at Gas Buddy, said the national average has seen its second straight weekly decline, with gas prices falling in over 40 states. However, some states have seen increases due to localized price cycling. He adds, with oil prices rallying over the past week, we may start to see the downward trend in gas prices begin to stall. So far, 2025 has been relatively calm at the pump for most Americans, thanks in part to OPEC's ongoing restoration of oil production and continued uncertainty surrounding tariff policy and its potential impact on the global economy. Regardless, Americans are currently spending over $200 million less per day on gasoline compared to this time last year. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Another slow start for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA playoffs. The Bucks fell behind early and tried playing catch up again. They lost to the Pacers 123-115. Head coach Doc Rivers.
We've gotten up to two poor starts, and we got to make an adjustment there for sure.
Bucks center Brook Lopez.
They've been the aggressor. We haven't. You know, we keep spotting them 10-point leads at least. The beginning of the first, the beginning of the third, and that's pretty much the game. It's tough when we start the game like that, when we start the half like that, and obviously we got to change that.
Indy now leads the series 2-0. Game 3 Friday night in Milwaukee. Baseball. The Brewers with a decisive 11-3 win over the Giants. The crew with an 8-run rally in the 6th. Most of the batters facing a 2-strike, 2-out count.
I mean, that's baseball. You have to be a 2-out, 2-strike hitter. You have to do things. The inning's not over with 2 outs, nobody on. The inning's not over with, you got to be willing to do that kind of stuff.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A shower or two tonight with a mostly cloudy sky and a low right around 50. For tomorrow, still a chance of a shower, highs to the upper 60s. A better chance of showers and storms Thursday night, carrying into Friday, highs only mid-50s.
Currently at 72 degrees.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the global cleft community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
The advantage of being a high school dropout is what you don't have. Like, you don't get it. That is below the dignity of your station, man.
Derek Van Orden wants you to know, as a kid, he was on food stamps. He was raised by a single mom. Me too. Attacking and belittling a witness, using your personal story to somehow justify it, it doesn't make you right. You know what's below the dignity of your station? Being a jerk while someone is raising valid concerns about the jerk move that you're about to make.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome three filmmakers from the Milwaukee Film Festival. Toby Jones and Ben Hansen join the show to talk about their film, AJ Goes to the Dog Park, and Mark Evans talks about his film, The Diamond King.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We, as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show, where it is always better when we stand together. Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday. Hope you're having a good midweek. And let's hope the rain holds off. Here in southeastern Wisconsin, we got some beautiful sunshine breaking through, some temperatures over 60 degrees. I hope you're enjoying some good weather wherever you may be. And happy first day of the draft. Hope we see an incredible economic infusion in the Green Bay area. But we have some pressing matters to attend to. And I've got no better guest than Milwaukee's very own Congresswoman Gwen Moore to join me to kick off this inaugural episode of The Maggie Dawn Show in the drive time. Welcome back to The Maggie Dawn Show, Congresswoman, and thank you for making time. It's lovely to see you again with all the beautiful flowers and greenery in your back in your background.
I just had a birthday, so this is my favorite thing. I love flowers. And so people regaled me with flowers.
Well, Congresswoman, I'm taking a note so that I can regale you around this time of the year with more flowers. Happy birthday, Congresswoman. Let's just jump right in. We continue to hear news and, frankly, excuse making for what is a disaster of a Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. And I wanted to get your opinion on Mr. Hegseth, and frankly, the response to date from the Trump administration about what can only be an extraordinary number of security breaches. Gosh knows what we haven't heard of yet. Specifically, some of the reporting over the last couple of days, Congresswoman, indicating that Mr. Hegseth must have reviewed the general's invasion plans, the timing of the airstrikes on the Houthis in Yemen, sitting at his desk, looking at a computer that is specifically designed. They have different computers that sit on their desk in the national defense, national security apparatus. One is specifically designed to keep secure war plans. What we're hearing from reporting is that he must have looked at that computer, seen the war plans, either copied some of it down, taken photographs of it, and then transmitted it not just on one signal chat, which is insecure and by all accounts that I've read from intelligence experts, likely signal has been cracked, decoded, and is being monitored by the adversaries of the United States. Did it not once, but twice, sending these war plans, the timing of actual air raids to his wife, who has no business knowing that, to his personal lawyer, who has no need to know that, and his brother, for what can only be surmised to be bragging rights. What do you make of all of this, Congresswoman?
Maggie, I just long for the days that we were talking about Hillary Clinton's server.
Right?
In her basement.
Seems so benign.
You know, and the big fallout from that, and now nothing. I can tell you, I am not an expert on military liaisons. I do know that they fired the so-called DEI Joint Chief of Staff, who would have never allowed these breaches to occur. I do know that, just like you said, described Maggie, he would have had to intentionally, because you can't forward this material or copy it or edit it, you know, because it's on the secure server. He would have had to have taken a screenshot of it, used the voice, you know, typed in. It was deliberate. And not only that, he can't even blame Mike Waltz for the first signal. He himself generated this signal conversation. And I'm telling you, people like Representative Don Bacon, of course, general in the Air Force, has been their first Republican, to my knowledge, who's publicly come out and say, this is just a bridge too far. He has got to go. I do think that the problems Republicans are having is that there are too many decent Republicans out there for them to just totally get away with this. Pete Hegseth has got to go. Now, like, I had a lot of views of him, you know, didn't want to see him confirmed. I realized that all those things were prejudicial, but my suspicions of his competence have been borne out. Totally.
Indeed, Congresswoman. They worry about DEI hires. I worry about hires that are full of disinformation, excuses, and incompetence. That's the DEI that we need to be concerned about. Bring on Lloyd Austin back. I'll take that DE hire any day of the week, twice on Sunday, and exponentially more times than I'll take any Pete Hegseth. What do you think the
risk? It's not funny. It's not funny. It's not like this is some position that's just a giveaway, give to your spoils. I mean, this is the...
Yes, it's not an ambassadorship. Right.
I mean, no, right. This is not the ambassador to some island somewhere. I mean, this is so serious. Our enemies must be planning on multiple attacks, given the incompetence that we... these unforced errors...
Unforced errors. What do you think the responsible response should be from your colleagues, especially on the House side of Congress across the aisle? What should Republicans be saying? Again, you referenced Don Bacon, who's been clear. He has been in battle. He has commanded troops. He knows how important operational security is to the lives of American soldiers, giving us potentially the ultimate sacrifice. Pete Hegseth says, puts all of their sacrifice at risk. What do you say to your congressional Republican colleagues? What should be happening in response to Mr. Hegseth's continual demonstrated incompetence? And to make matters worse, I'll just say this. This is a mistake that is inexcusable. To then blame others for it makes the inexcusability even more shocking in my mind.
You know, Maggie, the problem that we're having in this conversation is that you keep trying to make all this normal. What should our colleagues be doing if this were normal? This is, you know, he's there with the advice and consent of the United States Senate. So I do think some of the people in the Senate have to step up as well. I do think that there are people there who know how the chain of command is supposed to work. I noticed that the Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi has been very uncomfortable with Pete Hegseth and with the whole, you know. And so I do think, and I've suspected for a long time, that this house of cards is gonna fall because they do have people who are eventually going to reach out to grab their profiles and courage.
Mm. From your lips to God's ears, folks, we're joined.
God's ears.
Yes, we're joined this half hour by Congresswoman Gwen Moore. We began the discussion this afternoon talking about Mr. Hegseth. And Congresswoman, I will take a check from you on my tone any day of the week to remind ourselves that sane washing the insane is never appropriate. This is insane. This will cost American lives. Some breaking news today as well that I wanted to ask you about, Congresswoman. Marco Rubio announcing that there are going to be what can only be termed existential cuts to the U.S. State Department. When he initially addressed employees of the State Department after his confirmation, he lauded them for their work, said they were an integral element of American national security. And of course, today as well, Donald Trump claiming to put a deal for Ukraine and Russia on the table. It's a deal that Ukraine could absolutely never say yes to. It's no deal at all. It's just posturing. When we look at this as a whole, Congresswoman, what is your perception of the threat level to American security? And we could talk USAID cuts, right? The State Department on and on and on again. And at the head of that organization, an incompetent. What do you make of the threat level?
You know, I tell you, Marco Rubio is one of the biggest disappointments in public service, just in terms of his potential and the trajectory that I think he had to be a leader. And I think from the moment that he let Donald Trump get away with calling him Little Marco and then stepping into, I think that Trump appointed him just to put him in these kind of humiliating situations where we don't even recognize Marco Rubio. You know, I mean, he was somebody who was a big fan of USAID, and for good reason. You know, they had these little peanut butter packets, sort of like the thing you get the ketchup and mustard and condiments in, filled with like peanuts and soy, and that the USAID for severely malnourished kids that they're no longer giving. I mean, Marco Rubio knows that people are dying and they're dead, and they're, you talk about DEI, people are dead because of USAID and the status. People are not getting the destruction of PEPFAR. I mean, this was a signature Republican initiative that kept not only people in Africa safe, but people in the world. I mean, AIDS is very contagious. You know, disease, starvation, malnourishment, and little Marco is over there. It is really sad for him personally. And of course, it's a threat to our national security. When we don't take care of risks other places, you know, just set your timer. We're in trouble.
Yeah, I think that image of setting a timer, that the United States long arm of our soft power through programs that help with AIDS, malaria, measles, malnutrition, you name it, that was an incredible source of U.S. security by providing that assistance. The vacuum that will be created and is being created and has been created will be filled, and it will not be filled with powers that are favorable to the United States of America. We've got one more with us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Speaking about putting lives at risk, Congresswoman, you and Senator Tammy Baldwin today sent a correspondence decrying the cuts to the CDC that has gutted their lead poisoning subdivision. In response to a request for assistance from the city of Milwaukee to help data crunch and analyze how to respond to the lead crisis that's going on at MPS. When we come back, I'm going to ask the Congresswoman what she thinks needs to happen in addition to returning the funding to lead poisoning, which kills American children, which apparently Donald Trump and a lot of them don't care about anymore. We're going to continue this great discussion with Wisconsin's fine Congresswoman Gwen Moore. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these brief messages.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
An elegant, intimate experience in fine dining is right here at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge features choice cuts of Angus beef and fresh seafood prepared to perfection over an open flame grill, complemented by an extensive selection of fine wines and signature martinis. A passion for detail in exceptional dining. The Copper Oak Steakhouse and Lounge at Ho-Chunk Gaming, Wisconsin Dells. Open Thursday through Sunday. Call and make your reservations today.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent months, Milwaukee health officials have uncovered significant lead hazards in city schools, mostly due to lead-based paint. Several schools have now been closed as the problem has been found to be more widespread. In late March, city officials formally requested help from the CDC, but in doing so, they learned that the CDC's entire lead program had been eliminated by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is a major problem. Children in the state's largest city are being exposed to lead poisoning at their schools, and the Trump administration is not only refusing to provide assistance, they are eliminating the entire lead program that would help in cases like this one. Now, state and local officials must step up to do something for these kids, since Trump and RFK Jr. are gutting federal support. Milwaukee's children deserve better.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. We're having one of those great conversations with Wisconsin Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who today sent a letter to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, who also runs and controls the CDC, which operates the Epidemiologic Assistance Program, also called EpiAid. EpiAid enables rapid and short-term response by federal public health experts to investigate public health problems, such as the public health problem that the Milwaukee Public School District is currently dealing with. That is lead remediation and the fact that some of those remediation tactics weren't properly deployed in some MPS buildings that are older than 1978. Resulting in some of our students in the Milwaukee public school system testing positive for dangerous levels of lead. By the way, any level of lead is a dangerous level of lead. And so what MPS did in the city of Milwaukee was reached out to the CDC, specifically the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention and Surveillance Branch, to request technical assistance to analyze the data that has been collected so far to help assess risk levels, how to deploy resources to ensure that we are addressing the greatest risks first and reaching the families that we need to reach to ensure that all of our children and students in the MPS system are safe. That request was denied because that entire program has been shut down and defunded by Elon Musk, our billionaire overlord, his co-conspirator Donald Trump, and the know-nothing Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What did you ask for in your letter, Representative Moore, and what do you think should be happening next?
Listen, Maggie, thanks for that great description of this CDC program. And, you know, this is a program that for 70 years has, we don't know of an instance where they've turned down a municipality because people only apply for this fund when they're having some sort of emergency, public health emergency. Our case is lead poisoning. Like you said, no level is good. Measles might be another thing. And so, you know, the public health officials in Milwaukee were scratching their heads, figuring out why they were denied. And they were just told point blank because everybody had been fired who would administer the grant. And so what we are asking for, you know, and even RFK Jr. admitted at some point that they might make mistakes and they might have to bring people back. So we're saying, look, bring these people back post haste, because we do need this. We got 125 buildings, school buildings in Milwaukee that need lead abatement. We have 2,500 cases of lead poisoning, mostly from paint as opposed to lead pipes, in our community every year. It's just, it's very serious. And of course, as you noted, lead paint can cause cognitive disabilities, behavioral problems. There's no secret to the damage it can do. And we also know how terrible learning loss is, Maggie. And so you got 125 buildings, and you got this short period of time, maybe over the summer, when they could remediate these properties. And right now, we don't have anybody in place to, you know, assuming the money is there, you know, to push it out. And this would hardly be regarded as waste, fraud, and abuse, since kids cannot go to school.
Yeah, it's
buildings that are not remediated.
Yeah, it is shocking. We've had to send kids to other school buildings. This is a complete failure of government. This line, Congresswoman, from your joint letter with Senator Tammy Baldwin stood out to me, and I think it bears repeating here. I'm going to read it verbatim. You wrote today to Secretary Kennedy, children who are poisoned with lead or at risk for lead poisoning should not bear the burden of a haphazard restructuring plan. Madam Congresswoman, thank you. Because what I try to remind everyone about is that the costs of this chainsaw to our government, these slash and burn policies, will be borne first by those least able to bear the risks and the harms. Groups like our children. Congresswoman, say more about this. Say more about who's going to feel the acuteness of these drastic cuts first. And first, well, not last, but just first.
Well, you know, Maggie, just let me just say this. You know, it's just a side-by-side picture of this chainsaw. And then you see all of the people who are hungry, who are sick, who are disabled, people who are struggling to stay at home as opposed to having to be in a nursing home, all of the people who may suffer from lead poisoning, and we might wipe out our entire next workforce by not addressing stuff like measles. We don't have any throwaway kids. The president is talking about paying bonuses and incentivizing women to have babies because we don't have the replacement rate for our workforce. Well, we're throwing our kids away to just let them drink poison lead and eat poison paint because we're just too incompetent to actually make the appropriate interventions. I mean, you know, they're not saving one damn dime. They're just costing lives.
Not saving one damn dime, just costing lives. That's Congresswoman Gwen Moore. My most sincere thanks to you. Happy birthday. I cannot wait to speak again. There's so much going on. Folks, you're going to want to keep it locked. Next, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We're going to talk about why the heck Robin Voss hates women and families when we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
From the center, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The new data confirms Wisconsin had the highest voter turnout in the nation in November. It takes a while to get all this data from every state, not just from the election itself, but to estimate how many people are eligible. Minnesota is often number one with the highest turnout in the country. It's an upset. Wisconsin beat Minnesota by 29%. Chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, Ann Jacobs.
Wisconsin had the highest turnout in the nation of voting eligible population at 76.64%, beating the previous leader, Minnesota, who had 76.35%. I did inquire, no axes involved, we will not be receiving one, but I wanted to thank our Wisconsin folks for their amazing turnout in November.
Our previous state turnout record was set in 2004, but last fall was the highest we've seen in Wisconsin since 1948. Part of that can be attributed to Native turnout. Tribal voters set a new record in Wisconsin in the spring election. On the Menominee Reservation, turnout surged 80% from 2023, and both the Red Cliff and Bad River Bands of Lake Superior Chippewa had a 60% jump in turnout from last year. Wisconsin Native vote organizer Maria Haskins says they've been working to increase turnout for years, and it's working.
With people seeing their peers being more active in the polls and becoming more informed about a lot of these issues is what is really motivating them to go out and cast their ballot, because I think that people are realizing their vote is their voice.
Haskins says turnout has jumped 220% for Menominee folks since 2019. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Will there ever be a sequel to The Big Lebowski? If Jeff Bridges and Julianne Moore had their say, it would be absolutely. Unfortunately, it is the Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan, who seem against the idea. The Coen brothers have not made a sequel to any of their work, although Bridges said they do tend to surprise people sometimes. In addition to no sequels, the brothers also have not made a film together since 2018's The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. When he's not trying to sell you his own products like Aviation Gin or Mint, Ryan Reynolds actually makes films. He starred opposite Hugh Jackman in 2024's Deadpool and Wolverine. Recently, Jackman took a good-natured swipe at his pal Reynolds by telling a crowd at Radio City Music Hall that Jackman was curiously left out of a dance scene in the film. Don't worry, there is no awkwardness. Jackman did assure everyone in the crowd they are bros for life. Thank goodness for that. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A shower or two tonight with a mostly cloudy sky and a low right around 50. For tomorrow, still a chance of a shower, highs to the upper 60s. A better chance of showers and storms Thursday night, carrying into Friday, highs only mid-50s.
Currently at 72 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch The Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome three filmmakers from the Milwaukee Film Festival. Toby Jones and Ben Hansen join the show to talk about their film, AJ Goes to the Dog Park, and Mark Evans talks about his film, The Diamond King.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Every woman, there's two of us for this next half hour. There's me, Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can find me every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. And my good friend, and now very happy to call colleague in broadcasting, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN, former candidate for the 8th Congressional District, making inroads everywhere, both in politics and broadcasting. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Lyerly. It's a pleasure to have you. And congratulations on your new program that everybody can find on WGBW here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturdays and Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Welcome, welcome.
Thanks, Maggie. I'm so excited to be joining you. And congratulations on your new drive time slot. Like, come on, this is the big time.
Yeah, this is, it's very exciting. One of my colleagues told me today that this may be one of the only very few ever first question mark drive time political talk radio show that a woman hosts. Mm-hmm. Hadn't occurred to me. So it's an exciting time, and I wanted to start with an issue very close to women here in this state, but also important to every family in the state of Wisconsin, and that is the fact that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is poised to kill an expansion of Medicaid to provide post-birth, postpartum coverage for women up to 12 months. It currently just stands at, I believe, 2 months. It's
That's right.
Nothing. And Robin Voss repeatedly has said, I am uninterested in that expansion of coverage, despite the fact that by a vote of 31-1, an astonishingly overwhelmingly bipartisan approach in the Wisconsin State Senate, they approved that expansion. He's going to block it in the Assembly, telegraphing that yesterday. Since you're an OBGYN, I wanted to start with this. Mm-hmm. What is going on for women in their first 2 months after birth, and why is it so important to have that extension of coverage?
Postpartum care is critical for moms, because once the baby comes out, the pregnancy is not over. That's when the postpartum period begins. And in that time, between the time the baby comes out and 1 year later, a lot of deaths can occur. I mean, actually, more deaths occur in the postpartum period than before the baby comes out. Mm. And 80% of those deaths are preventable. Wisconsin is the only state that takes healthcare coverage away from these new moms at 2 months postpartum. So this is a real opportunity for us in Wisconsin to demonstrate to moms and families and communities that we truly do care about moms and babies by making sure that if these women have problems, if they need to go see the doctor, that they can do that. And the Senate gets that. And I just want to mention that this is a bill that was introduced by Republicans. It was shopped around by Republicans. It was bipartisan. And frankly, it is bicameral. Most of the people in the Assembly, Republicans and Democrats, support it. The barrier is Speaker Voss. Speaker Voss refuses to bring it to the floor for a vote. That is, he is the one person who is literally allowing my patients to die.
Allowing women and children to die. That's Speaker Voss's claim to fame as of late. I do not understand how anyone who claims to be a leader of a party that stakes or roots their party's values in family values and being pro-life could have such an anti-family and life, frankly, depriving position on something that is such a no-brainer. This is not difficult. This is really simple. This is not the case where you want to be the one state. I think there's 48 of 50 states have this extension of Medicaid coverage for the full 12 months after giving birth for women. This is not a badge of honor. This is a badge of shame. What do you want people to do about it?
48 of 50 states, and Arkansas has something that's much better than what we have. So, and here's the problem. Hey, I get it. Robin Voss doesn't want to give more handouts. This is entirely political. And I've heard it from some of my representatives as well, but they understand that that's not what this is. This is life and death. So here's our opportunity as citizens across the state of Wisconsin, our opportunity to reach out to our representatives, regardless of whether they are Republicans or Democrats. It doesn't matter. Call them, email them. If you see them in the grocery store, stop them and say, please vote for moms. Please vote for moms and babies and families, because this is truly life-saving and it is simple. Everybody else has done this. Let's make it happen for us too.
Folks, that's Dr. Kristen Lierley, my special guest this half hour. If you've got a question for Kristen or I, we love hearing from you. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC, because we're all about these great discussions here on Civic Media. I wanted to ask you to zoom out a bit. I know that your opponent in the last congressional race has been a little bit absent. Congressman Weed in absentia in his district, no showing various town halls. And at the same time, at the moment that Robin Voss is advancing an anti-family, anti-life platform here in the state of Wisconsin, we're looking at potentially devastating, death-inducing cuts to Medicaid on a national level. What's happening in the 8th Congressional District? What are you hearing from your neighbors and friends when it comes to these kinds of cuts, which are being contemplated in the budget reconciliation bill? Again, if you missed this in the news somehow, the House version and the Senate version to a certain extent are going to require $880 billion in cuts from the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House. The total amount of budget that they have, if they cut every single penny from every other program that they control appropriations for, it would only be $200 million. So yeah, they're going to have to cut Medicaid. What are you hearing from your friends and neighbors?
That's the tricky thing about the messaging, because what they say, and Tony Weed put it in his latest email out to his constituents, we will not cut Medicaid. They're very definitive about it. So people tend to believe that. But as you just said, Maggie, it's impossible. It's impossible to make these cuts without cutting Medicaid. And I think on a really fundamental level, people get that. What we've been doing across the district, all across Northeast Wisconsin, is holding listening sessions with just citizens. These aren't Republicans and Democrats. These are not county party meetings. These are just opening up doors and saying, come and tell us what you're concerned about. And it's everything from law and order issues to certainly immigration. You wouldn't believe the people who are concerned about immigration and the different angles that they share. It's Social Security, it's Medicaid, it's housing. People are feeling so uncomfortable about every little piece of their lives. And the thing that underlies all of it is the ability to afford to live. It's the economy. When they look at the stock market and they look at their 401ks and they look at the prices of groceries, and even people who have voted for Donald Trump and who believe in what Tony Weed had told them, they're questioning that now because they're seeing that prices haven't gone down. All of those promises that were made that they trusted these people to follow through with are not happening. And it's very scary.
I just, the defense of these things in the face of the promises made is very challenging for me. It used to be, and I'm going to sound like an old fart here, like it used to be that we would have these arguments about public policy that were at least tethered to some idea that what a candidate would say might be rhetorically flourished, right? There might be, you know, the poetry of campaigning versus the prose of governing, but that there was some good faith effort to tell the truth and to fulfill what the promises made on the campaign trail were. Those are just lies. I'm shocked. I've read the emails from people like Congressman Weed, Van Orden, Tiffany Steyle. They all say we're not cutting Medicaid. Then explain the math. That's a lie. I don't understand why people feel comfortable engaging in such repeated and pernicious falsehoods that will have these extraordinary impacts on their constituents. And to broaden the conversation a bit, Dr. Lyerly, red state voters will die in greater proportion than they will in purple states like Wisconsin.
For sure. We already know this when it comes to reproductive health. We know that people who live in states with abortion bans, pregnant women, are 3 times more likely to die as a result of their pregnancy than in states without bans, because abortion is health care. So yes, this absolutely affects people on a very fundamental level, but they have learned that this messaging works with their people, because the way we communicate nowadays, we all live in our rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. So unless you're talking to somebody who shares different beliefs than you do, you don't see it from their perspective. And they do. They believe what they are being told because they trust and they want to trust.
Yeah, it seems the only people that get tested on what they're saying are Dems. and that's not okay. The same standards for veracity and truth telling aren't being applied across the board. We got one of our regular listeners and callers on the line, Charles from Milwaukee. Say hello to Dr. Lyerly. It's nice to see you on my caller list. What's your question or comment?
Hello, Dr. Lyerly. The hypocrisy, I got two things. The hypocrisy of Robin Voss. I was driving earlier and I heard where he was talking to maybe a reporter, and he had the nerve to talk about handouts and welfare. And if I'm correct, didn't he get free COVID-19 money?
Sure did. Mm-hmm. Sure did. He was happy to cash that check.
And then the second point is, it's just amazing how one of the things that Republicans do well is their messaging. But they don't care about kids, because just this past summer, over 15 Republican governors turned down federal funds to feed kids over the summer during their summer break. And we know that there are a lot of kids that only meals they really get is when they go to school. So you can't say, well, we care about kids, and then you turn down funds that'll help feed those kids during the summertime.
Yeah, Charles, you're right on. Here's the rubric that Republicans deploy. If it is going to be help, essential, existential, life-saving help for people that may not vote for me, I'm going to call that a handout. Mm-hmm. If it's a subsidy or other forms of corporate welfare that benefit my core constituents and donors, we're going to call that necessary aid and supports. It is different languaging. It is, frankly, different biased, racist old tropes that keep coming back in different forms. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, DEI ain't about diversity, equity, inclusion for the Republican set. That's just today's N-word. We're going to keep this great conversation going with Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Your calls and texts are next, 855-752-4842. This is the Civic Media Radio Network, and you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show, where it's always better when we stand together for families.
Work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting proof of citizenship efforts are afoot in Michigan, while voters await the outcome of the Federal SAVE Act and a Trump executive order requiring similar restrictions. This despite no evidence of widespread non-citizen voting in Michigan or anywhere else in the U.S. In Michigan, a constitutional amendment which failed to achieve a two-thirds majority in the legislature just received the go-ahead to collect signatures for a citizen ballot initiative instead. If organizers meet the signature requirements, it could appear on the 2026 ballot. The Michigan proposal requires any new registering voters to show, quote, a birth certificate, passport, and/or other documents, and would eliminate the use of sworn affidavits for voters without approved IDs. Voters without citizenship documents could cast a provisional ballot, but must return with the documents within 6 days for it to count. While that may keep the 20, that's 2-0, alleged Michigan non-citizens from voting, 1 in 9 Americans don't have ready access to citizenship documents, and over 5.8 million Michigan citizens don't own a U.S. passport, according to the Center for American Progress. On the national proof of citizenship front, a federal circuit court ruling on President Donald Trump's March 25th order is expected April 24th, and the SAVE Act is in the U.S. Senate, but unlikely to overcome the filibuster. We have links to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
All eyes are on Wisconsin as the NFL's 2025 Player Selection Draft is finally here. 250,000 people are expected. Here's Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich.
Our citizens are just so excited to welcome hundreds of thousands of guests to the city of Green Bay. We're thrilled about it. I mean, the economic impact is going to be substantial. 20 million roughly in the metro area, and then I think 96 million is the number that's being used statewide.
It's the second time Wisconsin is hosting the draft, the first in 1939. But do you know where? Was it Oshkosh, Milwaukee, or Madison? The answer's coming up.
The smallest NFL city, but the biggest heart.
And with the main campus all around Lambeau Field, it's a time for the whole area to shine. Now, did you guess the location for the 1939 draft? It was a one-day event in Milwaukee with the NFL championship game the very next day. By the way, the Packers beat the Giants 27-0. There's a winning slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome. If you're just joining us, happy Wednesday afternoon. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest with us this half hour. Her name's Dr. Kristen Lierley. She's an OBGYN, ran for Congress in the 8th CD. She's going to win it next time if she decides to do it again. I am certain of that. Have you ever heard of the word pronatalism? I hadn't. But now I know what it is, courtesy of Donald Trump today, seemingly endorsing a proposal to pay women $5,000 for having a baby. That's a little weird, right? Little strange. Dr. Lierley, your reaction to this.
Pick me. Take that $5,000 per woman and actually invest it in programs like insurance and support to make sure that people can get health care, because everybody doesn't need $5,000, but everybody needs health care. Everybody needs child care. You know, I was just discharging a patient this morning, and we got into a conversation about politics, as often happens in my practice, and she hasn't voted in over a decade. And as she was holding her baby, and her mom was there, her mom was a Trump voter, and as she was holding her baby, we were were talking about the SAVE Act, and we were talking about Medicaid, which she depends on, and some of the things that she just hadn't connected the dots. And at the end of the conversation, she said to me, you know what? Now I have a reason to vote, and it's him. Mm. And I thought, yes, this is one of those little victories that if we are having conversations with people in the places where we typically don't, getting out of our rabbit hole like we were just talking about,
yes,
we can actually, every one of those conversations can make a difference, but we have to do it respectfully and with real information, not like Charles was saying earlier, not the hypocrisy, right, not the junk messages that were being sold, but real information and care, caring about each other, because that's how we build community around here, not by lying to each other and taking as much stuff as we can and going home.
Yeah. One of the ways that I've been trying to reconceptualize this, Kristen, is to think of this, if for some folks, in terms of self-advocacy. You are your own best advocate, no matter what place you may find yourself. But you can only advocate successfully for yourself when you're armed with good information. So if you haven't researched or tried to experience and expose yourself to differing points of view and taken the time to investigate that a little bit, you may be unwittingly advocating or voting, right, for things that are actually contrary to your best interest, contrary to your family's pocketbook, your family's overall health and wellness. So if you believe, like, hey, I'm a rugged individualist, or that's the thing about Americanism that resonates with you. Well, to be that best vigorous self-advocate, you have to go search out information that may be upsetting to you. You have to be open to that, because you do not want to be a stool. You don't want to be the mark in one of the world's longest cons. And that requires, again, all of us to have these kinds of discussions, even when it takes us out of our comfort zones. Speaking of discussions, we got a couple of callers. Chris from Rice Lake, say hello to Dr. Lyerly. What would you like to share this afternoon?
Good afternoon to both of you guys, actually. I firmly believe that Congress is not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid. They're going to call it wage fraud and abuse. And they'll kick a bunch of people off and say, well, they were fraudsters anyway. So that's where they're going to save their money. It's absolutely ridiculous. They've done it with all these other departments. It's going to continue. The grand lie is just going to continue. And my question to you guys is, if there's so much fraud in the federal government, where's all the prosecutions? Why aren't these people being arrested? You know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I forget what reporter actually asked Caroline Leavitt that question. In a gaggle, he said, oh, this is great. You found all this fraud. When is Pam Bondi announcing all of the fraud prosecutions? Because all of that would be very much against the federal system of laws and carries very significant penalties. She looked at him like a deer caught in headlights and said, that's a gotcha question, except it's not. Dr. Lyerly, your reaction to comments from Chris. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, I have actually heard that as well. And I think we all would like to see waste, fraud, and abuse cut from the system, but not when we need help. And, you know, to go back to the pronatalism, what they're cutting is, like, in the CDC, there's a division of reproductive health. They've cut it by 2/3. And that means that they've cut the newborn screening program. So
right,
for new babies that are born, where you get that heel stick and you send the blood in to test for all of these diseases that are treatable, but all of that research is gone now. You talked about the lead pipes.
Yes.
There are so many. The contraception information is gone. Investigating maternal deaths is gone. So if you really are invested in people having more babies, create the infrastructure to make it safer. We've got the worst maternal mortality rate in the developed world by far. Getting worse. It's getting worse. More women die as a result of their pregnancy in this country than any other developed country. We can do better, and they owe it to us. If Donald Trump is going to be the fertilization president, as he says, he needs to follow through afterwards.
Yeah, it's one thing to be, quote, the self-proclaimed king of IVF. It's one thing to endorse $5,000 for every woman that has a baby. It's another thing to make an actual commitment to the health, safety, and welfare of every single one of those babies and mothers that you just handed checks to. the most persuasive argument that I've ever heard and seen move a pro-lifer is that's great when you care about babies, air quotes around that, when they're in utero. How about you keep caring about them after they're born throughout the entirety of their life? You know, free lunches, universal health care for all children. Let's do these things. We can do them. We should do them. We will do them together. My thanks for being with me together here today to Dr. Kristen Lierley and each and every one of you. When we come back, boy, do I have a treat for you. Head of baseball operations, the effective CEO of the Milwaukee Brewers, Rick Schlesinger, is joining me. We're going to talk a little baseball and burgers coming up next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. 12 Democratic-led states now suing Donald Trump over his recent tariffs, arguing the trade policy has upended the constitutional order and brought chaos to the American economy. The White House working to shift its message on tariffs. President Trump says the U.S. is engaged in talks with dozens of countries and voiced optimism that China talks will happen too. Stocks ending with gains after weeks of losses due to uncertainty. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said that the U.S. will not be unilaterally reducing tariffs on China. And also behind closed doors, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent acknowledged that negotiations with China is going to be a slog, but he also said that this trade war is not sustainable.
At the Vatican, the body of Pope Francis now lying in state in St. Peter's Basilica, where lines of people are waiting to pay their respects over the next 3 days leading up to his funeral on Saturday. Fire crews in New Jersey continue to battle a wildfire. This is ABC News.